exterior para, según ellos, evitar la mala imagen de la ciudad y del Estado. El segundo, la guerra que efectuó Calderón contra el narcotráfico. También eso minimizó la desaparición y el feminicidio. Ahora hay que volver a visualizar para que tenga el lugar que merece esto de la desaparición y muerte de jóvenes en Ciudad Juárez.
El padre mexicano, que por 4 años no sabe del paradero de su hija, dice que los crímenes continúan en la impunidad.
Calderón no hizo nada por la desaparición y el asesinato de jóvenes. Inclusive se incrementó el asesinato y desaparición. Y no llevó a nadie a detener. En 20 años no solamente he visto chivos expiatorios, según lo que dice la prensa.
Ricardo Lanín se refirió a la caravana por la paz liderada por Javier Sicilia en Estados Unidos el año pasado. Además, pide a sus connacionales al otro lado de la frontera apoyar a la red Mesa de Mujeres de Ciudad Juárez.
Sicilia no le interesan las mujeres desaparecidas de Juárez. Las madres intentaron hablar con él y nunca no les dio espacio. Mi mensaje es que si quieren mandar algún apoyo a las mujeres desaparecidas de Juárez, lo manden por medio de la red Mesa de Mujeres. Y que pidan apoyo al gobierno americano para que al mexicano actúe, ya para que no sigan desapareciendo esos jóvenes, que ya pare esta muerte de tantas jovencitas. Y pues a la prensa internacional y a los organismos internacionales que presionen y nos ayuden para seguir presionando nosotros, a la CEDAW, a la Corte Interamericana, que no olviden este problema, que pongan cartas en el asunto.
La caminata por la vida y la justicia llevó también como demanda que el Servicio Médico Forense entregue los cuerpos de 144 jóvenes sin identificar que mantienen las morgues desde hace 2 años. Acusan de ineficiencia al personal de investigación de la Fiscalía Especializada de Feminicidios. Los familiares de las mujeres desaparecidas o asesinadas en Juárez, ciudad fronteriza con Estados Unidos, entregaron al gobierno de Chihuahua un pliego petitorio de 8 puntos. Le dieron 30 días para contestarlo, de lo contrario, realizarán otras acciones.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
Miles de venezolanos participaron el miércoles en la conmemoración del 55 aniversario del levantamiento cívico popular que derrocó al dictador Marcos Pérez Jiménez. La victoria del movimiento fue efímera, pues la llamada Cuarta República se instaló en el poder por 40 años y comenzó una cacería de activistas de izquierda. Nicolás Maduro, vicepresidente de Venezuela, recordó la importancia de la fecha.
Se encontraron en las calles de Caracas los pobres venidos de los campos venezolanos que ya ocupaban las montañas de Caracas con los soldados que en su estanque salieron una vez más en nuestra historia, pueblo armado y pueblo civil. Y fue una jornada que avizoraba vientos de revolución, un pueblo que despertaba en búsqueda de su soberanía.
Maduro citó las advertencias reiteradas del presidente Hugo Chávez sobre las traiciones al pueblo.
Frente a las amenazas de la burguesía, y frente a la amenaza de la traición siempre ha perseguido la historia de manera trágica del pueblo venezolano. Y nosotros, en nombre de esa enseñanza de nuestro comandante Hugo Chávez, nos hemos planteado, junto a nuestro pueblo, derrotar para siempre el maleficio de la traición y de los traidores.
Por otra parte, el ministro del Interior de Venezuela, Néstor Reverol, denunció la existencia de un plan para asesinar al vicepresidente Nicolás Maduro y al presidente de la Asamblea Nacional, Diosdado Cabello.
Hemos recibido informaciones muy importantes de inteligencia en donde actores de la ultraderecha venezolana, en complicidad con actores de la ultraderecha en el exterior, se encuentran planificando un atentado contra el vicepresidente ejecutivo de la República. Igualmente un atentado contra el presidente de la Asamblea Nacional.
Durante el acto en Caracas, el ex vicepresidente venezolano José Vicente Rangel dio a conocer un plan de sectores de la oposición llamando a las Fuerzas Armadas a liberar al país de lo que llaman la tutela cubana.
Algunos nombres de los firmantes de este documento: Enrique Tejera París, Osvaldo Álvarez Paz, María Corina Machado, Diego Arria, Pablo Medina, Marcel Granier, Oscar García Mendoza. Por cierto, un banquero metido en esto. Es interesante investigarlo, porque creo que es uno de los grandes traficantes del sistema financiero venezolano.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. And we're also streaming around. If you go to the freakradio.org website and click on the little red dot at the top of the transmitter graphic, you can find us on the stream as well. Today is, of course, January 24th, 2013. I'm going to be doing a number of things today, playing a lot of it's audio tape I got at the Calvary Episcopal Church, the red church that has a meal every Monday, and did a number of interviews there. You'll be hearing those. Interviews especially with Father Joel Miller, Rene Curry, and Scott Curry, Rene's partner, spouse, hubby, whatever you will. Also, I'll be hoping to get a call from Josh Hart of Stop Smart Meters, who is going to give us an update on the struggle to at least make smart meters an option rather than a requirement. And, of course, your phone calls. And the phone number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. I also have an in-studio guest with me, Wade, and, of course, the silent but mighty Zeke. Zeke is his companion and pooch, as I call him. Hi, Wade.
Hello. How you doing?
Okay. Move a little closer to the mic and say something exciting. There you go. That's good.
Okay.
That's good. I want to make sure it works. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Wade, you happened into the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting yesterday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And that was your first Huff meeting?
Yes, it was.
And how did you hear about Huff?
Well, I did it through you in that interview at the Red Church about the incident that
happened to me. 2 days before.
2 days before, yes.
And, I may well be playing that interview, but I guess people will just get a double dose. Maybe they can take a coffee break when the interview comes up on tape. Let me ask, where are you from?
Sacramento, California.
Uh-huh.
I'm a native.
Uh-huh.
And I had some bad misfortune in Wichita, Kansas, and decided to travel. So I took a little break.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am.
And so you said that you were born in Sacramento and ended up in Wichita, and now you're here in Santa Cruz.
That's correct.
And so how long have you been traveling or without lodging?
February 14th, 2012. This time.
Uh-huh. That's just happened to you before?
Yeah, off and on between 2001.
And what's the reason? A lifestyle choice, necessity? What's the deal?
Freedom.
Uh-huh.
Freedom. I never got the traveling bug out of me. Our family did a lot of vacationing growing up and always going somewhere, you know. Uh-huh. And I like to hitchhike, too.
Okay. So, should I ask you about the misfortune? Is that something you want to talk about, or do you want to? You're homeless, you say, by choice rather than because economic circumstances oppressed
right.
you here.
I had a good job in Wichita, Kansas, and just decided to quit it. And
what was the job?
I worked for a truck rental place. Did truck rentals and mini storage.
Are you glad you did?
Yeah.
And yet, one of the reasons you're here is because you had numerous unfortunate encounters with local authorities, right?
Correct.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Which one?
Well, you can begin the most recent, or you can go back to the most distant, or the one the most shocking. You be the judge as to what you want to say.
The one at hand right now is cruelty to animals. That just cracks me up. You know, going up, I camp up highway, I guess it's 9, about a mile and a half up. And going along that highway, cars are not going slow, and the dog is scared to go up there, and I don't blame him. Well, he's trained to go on the left side of me on the bicycle, and I was having him on the right side for his safety. And one of our wonderful Santa Cruz police decided that I was treating him cruel because I was having to drag him a little bit. And there's other incidents where they've taken a dog already and euthanized him, euthanized, whatever that's called.
Mm-hmm.
Tongue twisters, euthanized.
Uh-huh.
And then a guy has a puppy that's at the HRC, and the puppy's not trained exactly perfect on the leash yet, and the same officer,
Officer Winston
said he better not drag that dog. When that dog stops to go do something, that means that the dog needs to stop and go do something. I'm telling people how to train their dogs.
Does Winston have a dog?
I do not know.
Hey, does he have is he part of a canine unit?
No, he's not a canine cop.
Hmm. So you first encountered Winston when he stopped you on Highway 9? Or
Highway 9, yep. Right about the tannery area.
Now, when you said he saw you dragging your dog, how much of it was a dog turning head over heels and whimpering and getting all bloodied on the street? Did he claim you were dragging your dog?
Well, having to pull him on a bicycle, and yeah, pulling him, but he doesn't want to go on the right side. He kind of does have a bad eye from a rat trap incident where he got a rat trap caught on his face. That's kind of humorous, but not so humorous. But, you know, and I'm deaf in one ear, so we're kind of a team. So he can't see me, and I can't hear him, and I'm dragging him up the hill. According to Officer Winston, he was would whimper every once in a while. That's when I was, you know, would drag the leash hard. And it's not anything that anybody doesn't do to their dog to get him to mind. I see people in the dog park every single day. I go to the one, I don't know which park it is, but along the levee there, little dog park. I go there every day, and there's people, you know, hitting him with the leash or you come here right now and grab him with a dog whimpers. I see it every day. It's how people, you know.
Is that an appropriate way to treat a dog? I don't know. I'm not a dog.
I'm not really sure, but sometimes, you know, I use different words for Zeke. Like, I use boundaries when he goes and runs off. And he hears boundaries, he only goes so far. He doesn't, you know, really stray from that.
He knows the word boundaries.
He knows the word boundaries.
Can he speak French?
Italian.
No.
Italian.
He knows what
avante means. That means, let's, you know, forward, or let's go. You know, avante.
Now, what kind of a dog do you have here?
He's a Jack Russell Terrier and Rat Terrier hybrid.
So he's a kind of a small dog.
Yes, he is. About 25 pounds.
And how old is he?
He's right about 2 years old.
Okay. And how long have you had him?
I've had him since September of 2011.
Uh-huh, and you got him...
In Wichita, Kansas.
So he's been traveling with you ever since?
Yeah, he's been around me ever since.
Have you had this problem with other police agencies?
No, never.
Cruelty to animals?
No, never.
You actually got a ticket from Officer Winston for cruelty.
Yeah, for cruelty to animal.
And you have a court date coming up?
Yeah, it's on 2/16.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he's got this videotape of me brutalizing this dog. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. You know, you're right here.
Uh-huh. Tell our audience
He had a bad habit of telling me to shut up every time I tried to say something. Like, hey, let me get to camp before it gets dark. You need to shut up. I have a right mind to take your dog right now. I can. I said, well, you're going to have to shoot me or tase me. You better shut up. That's all he had to say.
So Officer Winston repeatedly told you to shut up?
Several times.
And... So this ticket, and you've researched it to find out how much the bail is on the ticket if you were to pay it off?
No, I haven't.
Is this the first court date, or have you been to court?
I haven't been to court at all. Other things I've had just were infractions, one for soliciting, not on Pacific Street.
Soliciting meaning panhandling.
Panhandling, flying a
sign.
What
were you doing? Were you grabbing people's shirts as they had skirts and screaming at them as they walked by? Or
that's what they seem to think we do, huh? You know, I think we're all...
We know you're kind, Wade.
They think we're all...
We're aware of the kind of malice.
Yeah, they think we're all on crack or all, you know, dummies that drink. Mm-hmm. You can't even sit up on the levee in the morning at 7:32 a.m. with your camp buddies and drink a cup of coffee and...
You said that is another incident.
Yeah, that's another one. Isn't that funny? I mean, you can't even do that. We don't have a motorcycle cop come on you and say, "What's in the cups, you guys? We had a complaint about you." And, you know, so you unscrew the lid on your coffee cup and the steam comes... Hey, that's coffee. So he gets back on the radio. Oh, they're up here drinking coffee. No problem.
Well, they could send out a team to do a chemical analysis. Yeah, he might have spiked the coffee with a little rum, perhaps.
Irish whiskey. Don't drink.
You don't drink.
No, I do not drink.
But you are a coffee drinker, so you are a caffeine addict. In other words.
Oh, heaven forbid!
And you are a dog. Abuser.
Oh, a terrible one. Just absolutely terrible.
So this is a court date for February 16th, and what's the nature of this? This is a misdemeanor charge?
Yeah, it's a misdemeanor.
So you get a jury trial on this.
Well, I could bring it to jury trial, and that would be interesting. That would just waste much more of their taxpayers' time.
Yeah, well, I think...
What
you want to do, of course, is get a public defender before... I mean, unless you decide you want to pay hundreds of dollars for a citation, because that's the other option at best. Misdemeanors could be up to $1,000. Actually, in theory, so can an infraction, but usually they're much less. What you want to do is get a copy of the videotape to see to get all the evidence against you, the police reports, the videotape. And that, I guess, will be happening on February 16th. Do you know what time your court date is?
8:30 a.m.
And what's your last name for those who want to attend this court hearing?
ENTZ. It's pronounced Entz.
Wade Entz.
Yes.
Okay. I've actually... there has been some issues about dogs with people like Brianna Brewer, who is a singer and artisan on Pacific Avenue, who has been attacked by the police, or ticketed by the hosts and police, and for having her dog with her when she was doing her jewelry, or not on a leash, even though it's a service animal. And I guess your dog is also a service animal.
PTSD.
And tell me a little bit about that. What kind of problems you got in that regard, if you feel like talking about it?
My wife dying.
Yeah.
Just gave up.
You gave up after she died?
Yeah. No sense in carrying on.
This was what,
freedom.
In Wichita 2 years
Wichita,
ago?
Wichita, yeah.
Now, did the PTSD come also from a previous military deal? Or
no military experience at all.
And you were diagnosed with this by some doctor somewhere?
No.
You just know.
Your moods change. You don't want to do the same things that you shared, and nothing really matters anymore, and you get that traveling bug, and you just got to go. I had a man there in Wichita tell me that don't start selling your stuff off. You know, don't sell this. You'll regret it. Haven't regretted it yet.
So you sold all your stuff and hit the road.
Hit the road.
And you've been here for a couple months.
Yeah, about a month and a half, I guess.
And have you had enough money to be able to get a place to stay, or have you essentially been economically forced to camp outside?
I have a tent. I have warm sleeping bags.
Right, but that you also have $50,000 with you, or you don't have a lot of money for motel facility?
No.
So that was when I asked you if you were homeless by choice. It sounds like you made a choice because of your psychological condition, because of the stress you were under, because of the life situation you were in. But also, could you afford a room, and if you needed to, or would you, are you in a position where you really have to be outside?
I guess I could get a job, like somebody yelled at me today. Yeah, you could get a job.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a matter of, sure, I'd take a job, but I don't have a place to lay my head every night where I can take a shower, eat a normal meal, wake up in the morning, have my coffee, and then go to work. Then there's a matter of, would the dog be able to go to work with me? Or do I got to leave him tied up in the woods? Or, you know, or what? And that was one of the reasons, too. There was nobody else to you know, she had her dog, and I ended up giving that dog to her son because it was her dog, you know, and man.
No, I hear you, man.
But yeah.
So the situation, when I asked you about with your homeless by choice, it sounds like you made a choice, but having made that choice, you're now in a position where you're homeless by necessity. You're
necessity.
In an economic strait.
Necessity, but I'm not whining about it.
No, I know you're not.
And
but you don't really have another option than to sleep outside at the moment. I mean, psychological condition you're under, in theory, I guess. You could have you sought disability treatments or payments or anything of that sort?
Yes.
How's that go?
Well, I have a GA appointment, or a general assistant, I guess it is. I have one of those on the 18th of this month. I've looked at my paperwork, but I was going to get complete help. Disability. My body's pretty banged up from bicycle incidents.
Have you been?
How do you like that?
Showing me a scar on your right shoulder.
Yeah, it's a broken collarbone in two places.
And this is local? This happened, or
no? Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Was it a hit and run? Or?
No, it was just me farting around on a bike.
You were doing bicycle tricks.
Pretty decent rider. Pretty decent.
But you still broke your collarbone.
Well, of course, I broke my sternum. I broke my. Neck. I broke ankles. I broke arms.
This is because you're a wild and crazy guy who's trying to kill himself, or what's the deal?
It's fun.
It's fun breaking your bone?
No, it's just fun riding. Plain and simple fun riding a bicycle.
But so would this happen on slippery streets or what?
No. Just
you ran into a large truck. Broke your collarbone?
Racing BMX. Come in the first turn, broke a chain, and clipped in and went crazy, and ba-bam, ba-bam, ba-bam.
Well,
concussion through the helmet.
You had a helmet on.
Yeah, helmet on, but concussion. Lost 4 days of my life. It was kind of funny. I went back home and didn't know what I was doing, and took apart all my different bikes and combined all these pieces together, these bikes. And when I got 4 days later, looked at them and went, my God, what happened? And, well, 3 days into this, the hospital called and said, you did have a concussion they didn't tell you about. So, we do some crazy things.
How does Santa Cruz strike you? You've been here for 2 months. What's your sense of the city? And why are you here is another question. What brings you to Santa Cruz?
I left Boulder, Colorado, and basically got a ride to Arcata, California. Stayed in Arcata for a minute, and it rained so much that the moss and the mold smell really got to me, so I kept traveling down the 101 and met up with a friend in Garberville, and we traveled the rest of the way down and lost each other again and found each other again in San Francisco, and then traveled from San Francisco to here, which is a point we made in Garberville to come to with Santa Cruz because the weather was better than most places we'd been.
You didn't come here because you heard the social services were great and the police were friendly or anything?
No,
like
we came for the weather.
You came for the weather. Now, it's been raining a lot. What do you think of that?
But weren't those few days of sunshine great?
They were better than the rain.
I was wearing shorts, you know, and sleeveless shirts. It was nice.
So, what's your impression of how the police treat people downtown and so forth? Any sense of that?
You know, I'm just wondering if they treat the everyday people like they do the homeless. And from what I've asked around and stuff here in the last couple of days, yeah, they do. They're really kind of dicks. Sorry to say that, but dicks.
Have you had any run-ins downtown that you want to talk about that concern you?
I don't like the dog thing, not having a dog. Many of them not being able to fly a sign. You know, if I go without, you know, I can go without cigarettes, you know, by sniping. I don't really like to do that. I like to keep a pack of rolling papers and break them open. I don't want to get some scabies off of somebody.
Sniping, of course, is picking up butts from the street and reusing them.
But, you know, I don't want to pick up scabies or something from somebody else, you know, because I'm very healthy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I get a lot of exercise, I'll tell you that much.
You know, in Santa Cruz, they have a law that says you can have your dog downtown now after 40 years of dogs not being allowed downtown, but only if you're not sitting with a dog and a sign soliciting spare change. They've also tried to do that with respect to musical performances, but I think that is not considered soliciting, in spite of the claims of some officers, the phony claims of some officers, because musical performing is not, or doing an artistic display is not soliciting, even if you're looking for donations. For all of you artists and performers out there, in case you don't know that. Anyway, if you want to talk, to give, ask Wade any questions, make your comments, have some thoughts, there is a call-in number, and it's 469-3119. 469-3119 is the call-in number. And one more time, grab your pencils, 469-3119. And you can call in and you can chat with us. And maybe you think that, you know, you got maybe negative things to say. Maybe you got positive things to say. Maybe you just got additional things you want to say. Maybe you've got nothing to say, in which case we won't hear from you.
I have an experience with a couple of civilian ladies. One of them is Melanie. Hi, Melanie. I knew you'd listen. And to the other one who wanted to buy Zeke, he's not for sale at any price, but, you know, nice little offer. And I did like your cute little tears. You thought he was so cute. But thinking I was rushing up when I'm looking for a piece of cardboard to make out a sign that says, "We take pennies," which you watched me even do it, and you handed me money out of your pockets, both of you. But don't make an assumption that somebody is hurting an animal when they're taking off his coat and putting it in a mud puddle for him to lay on, and the zipper got stuck. But thank you. I hope you're listening.
Mm-hmm.
Because you like the dog. Think how much you like the dog. Think how much I love the dog. I've been around him a long time.
So, had any much contact with other dog owners here? How are other people treating their pooches in town?
With a lot of love.
Now, I ran into you at the Red Church, which is every Monday that between 5 and 7, there's a meal there. Father Joel Miller does this right at, I guess it's at Cedar and Lincoln Streets, across from the Farmer's Market and the Nickelodeon Theater. Have you been using that meal pretty regularly?
Every Monday.
And you sleep at night outside, you say, out of town, but sometimes you end up on the levee?
Well, during the day. Uh-huh. During the day, you know, everybody tries to find a place to go do their thing after they've, you know, panhandled, whatever, go get cigarettes. Taster's Choice instant coffee, because hot water is free. You know, we all have our own cups. We sit around and drink coffee, smoke cigarettes. Well, maybe a little bit of weed, you know, but I mean, not really out there trying, you know, not robbing anybody, because we're on the hill right after dinner time, and we stay there right until, you know, daybreak and go repeat our process.
Is there much sleeping on the levee going on these days?
I really don't know. I don't go there. It's too urban. I was at Harvey West for a while. That's too urban for me, you know. That's where I got a ticket for camping. That was kind of funny. I got the ticket for camping. It wasn't going to give me one for sleeping, so I, you know, smarted off and said, you know, Webster's Dictionary defines camping as an activity and sleeping as an inactivity. Which was I doing? And he's like, got all pissed off and give me a ticket for camping. I'm doing an activity.
What time of day did he get the ticket?
Oh, that was like about 6:30 in the morning or so.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's illegal to both camp and sleep at 6:30 in the beautiful city of Santa Cruz, regardless of whether you have a legal place to go. Have you ever tried to use the, what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or they call the Homeless Services Center, to either go to the armory or...
I can't go to the armory because of the animal.
They don't allow dogs?
No, they don't allow dogs. Plus, I wouldn't want to, you know, sleep asshole to elbows with somebody anyway, you know. Some.
You tried to get on the Pauley Loft waiting list, even if you're not going to get into the shelter, it may provide you with the option to get your camping tickets dismissed if you get more of them. Are you aware of that?
No.
Yeah, that is the rule, although it may not be the case in the winter if there's space at the armory that night. But on evenings, either 8 or 9 months of the year during the non-winter season, and also during the winter when the armory is full, tickets are dismissed if you're on the waiting list of the Pauley Loft or the River Street Mini Shelter, as I call it. Or at least that's what they say. And I've been having a running struggle with the Homeless Lack of Services Center to get them to give people documentation that they're on the list so you can show it to the cop and say, look, why waste your time? I'm on this list. You want to give me a ticket? It's going to be a waste of time for us both because it'll be dismissed. Or alternately, go into the homeless lack of services center during the day and say, here's my ticket. Can you give me a letter that says there was no room that night? Unfortunately, during the winter, they usually claim there's extra room at the armory, even though that might not be the quarters that you would wish on anyone at any particular time. And it's they have a maximum of 75 to 100 people there. And that means of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, only a fraction can even theoretically fit into the armory. And again, many people don't use the armory because of one of the conditions you suggest, a pet. I think couples are... I don't believe they're allowed to sleep together. Maybe if they're married, I'm not sure what the story is with that. Maybe not. Of course, you have a limited time to go up there between 4 and 6, so if you're working, it can be very difficult. And you were saying at some point you may want to take work because you're going to get tired of, you know, getting shit for panhandling on the streets and so forth.
I'm a bicycle mechanic, auto mechanic. I can weld. I can do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. All I need is a chance. And landscaping to the guy that maybe you're listening. He said, a job would help this morning. He said, a job would help in your landscaping truck with your two employees. Made yourself look pretty good. I said, do you have one? And you drove off. Take a job.
So what I'm going to do now...
And wait, a couch, is- to couch to sleep on. Even pay you $8 a day. That's $240 a month.
You have enough to pay $8 a day, huh?
Give me a couple weeks on the job, and I'd be glad to give somebody money to live in their house, uh-huh. A spare room.
Well, if anybody wants to take Wade up on his offer, you can leave a message at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the phone number there is easy to remember, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So what I'm going to do now, Wade, although I'm expecting a call from Josh Hart of Smart Meters, is start playing some tape, and you're welcome to hang here and make comments and thoughts if you'd like, or take off, whatever feels good to you. And I'm going to continue with the rest of the show. You feel free to co-host if you want, or to stretch your legs and do whatever you need to do next.
Party on, Robert.
What's that?
Party on, Robert.
We will party on, I guess, if that's what we're doing.
Like Wade's World. Wade's World.
All right. So here we go. Let's listen to a little audio from, I guess, a couple days ago. Well, before I get into that, I think I actually want to make a few announcements first. On Sunday, when I have a longer show, and I'll be back again next Sunday, presumably, there is, the day before Sunday, on Saturday at 4 o'clock, there was a controversy developing around Food Not Bombs, the group that provides free food, good free food, at the post office, right under the eaves of the post office, every Saturday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Police showed up at that. With what seemed to be various warnings, presumably, or it was seemed to be at the instigation of the postmaster, and Food Not Bombs activists serving food said, look, we're just serving food. We're not violating any postal regulations. And they pulled out the postal regulations that they'd been given some weeks before by postal employees. But there does seem to be a potential crackdown on Food Not Bombs. It's not necessarily going to be a crackdown. Police officers, can do whatever they want to do, and they usually do. But I think for those who are interested in seeing this meal continue, and who also, more important, want to preserve the right to be in public spaces without being harassed by police, or to support those who are, I would encourage people to come down with their cameras, with audio and video recorders, with friends. And you don't even have to risk arrest, as has happened in different cities with Food Not Bombs, when police have demanded that they leave, and they've said, look, we have a right under the Constitution to be here, and please leave us alone. We're just trying to serve people free food, and so forth. I don't know what's going to happen. It may well be that Food Not Bombs will be left alone, and maybe they will, if told to leave, choose to move to the sidewalk, or to the town clock, or 6 miles off the coast, whatever they choose to do. But I think it would be good for people to go there. And I'm going to be there myself 4 o'clock on Saturday, reporting on what's happening and also trying to be supportive. I'm not a Food Not Bombs cook, and I'm not a Food Not Bombs server. I'm just a private individual who has a certain sympathy and concern for civil rights for folks generally. And this doesn't just affect homeless people, though Food Not Bombs is very concerned with what's called the criminalization of poverty, how people who are poor are suspected as criminals. What's that in your coffee cup? And you're mistreating that dog and that sort of thing.
This could happen to you.
And so that there is a focus on homeless folks. And Food Not Bombs is one of the groups that tries to say this is wrong, and the priorities of the country should be food, not bombs. And, of course, priorities are just the opposite in the national politics and, to some extent, in the local politics, too, because a lot of money goes into police enforcement of you can't be here, you can't be there, get out of town, keep your head down, go to jail if you do this, that, or the other. If you sit down next to a building, and so forth, these are criminal acts in Santa Cruz. In all business districts, you're not allowed to do any of that stuff. So, I'm going to be down there standing up for the right to serve food and eat, or perhaps sitting down for the right. And I hope to see other people there, too. You can find more by going to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And also by checking the Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs Facebook page. We have a call, though. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Yes, this is Josh Hart from Stop Smart Meters calling for Robert.
Hey, Josh. You've reached Robert. And
hello, Robert.
Welcome to Free Radio.
Thank you.
In the studio with me is Wade and his dog, Zeke. Zeke and Wade meet Josh. Josh meet Zeke and Wade.
How you doing?
Hi, Zeke and Wade.
Hi.
I guess one of the advantages of living out in the Poganip is you're pretty far away from smart meters.
Well, distance is everything, you know, they say. And you know, even though it can feel like there are smart meters all around in Santa Cruz now, it's still important to keep your distance and to let other people know, you know, these things are dangerous. They do emit, you know, microwave radiation, which is not healthy, needless to say.
So, I guess it's been about 6 months since you've been on the show, or it's been quite a while. And I know we talked really briefly this afternoon earlier about you just got back from a PUC, Public Utilities Commission meeting, or some such thing?
We spoke, yeah, at the Public Utilities Commission meeting up in San Francisco. There's a new commissioner on there, appointed by Governor Brown. And we gave her a welcome and basically, you know, laid out the problems of the smart grid, which are mounting by the day, and smart meters being the most, you know, visible manifestation of the smart grid to date. And we were up there also to attend a hearing because we're going sort of toe-to-toe with PG&E, who are trying to conceal documents about senior executive involvement in the William Devereaux case. And William Devereaux was the head of the smart meter program, went to all the local governments to sell them on the concept, and he was caught, of course, in November of 2010, prying into our email group and our private emails, and gathering intelligence and end up sharing intelligence with a number of executives within PG&E, and as it turns out, the Public Utilities Commission too. So the outcome of that was basically, you know, we continue to try and wrestle the documents out away from PG&E and into the public sphere, so that, you know, we can actually know what went on there, because the wrongdoing, you know, seems to just be getting wider and wider with the deeper you look into this stuff.
What kind of documents have you revealed so far, and what kind of wrongdoing are you suggesting has been going on?
Well, PG&E violated a number of laws and regulations, the Business and Professions Code, various privacy laws, wiretapping, when William Devereaux basically pretended to be Ralph Gloria, an activist who wanted to join us in the cause, you know, an infiltrator. And he said, I live in Oakland. I really want to help out with the smart meter cause. You know, what can I do to get involved? And his email program, you know, betrayed him, essentially. and said, William Devereaux said, you know, so it was really embarrassing for the company, and they had to, you know, he resigned in shame, and now he's working for Oracle, because apparently spying for PG&E is goes on your CV and then get picked up by other corporations.
Well, what is Oracle?
Oracle is like a data management, you know, they're moving a lot more into the smart grids. They do computer systems and, like high-tech stuff, like, you know. They're based on the peninsula, I think in Redwood City or something, or San Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
It's full on. It's routine, you know, that these large utility companies that are making a ton of money from ratepayer fees are actually actively, you know, spying on and infiltrating, you know, those of its customers who are trying to ensure that the utility is delivering, you know, electricity and gas safely and healthfully. And it's a really, you know, chilling prospect, and especially when you add it on top of the events of yesterday in Illinois. I don't know if you've spoken about what happened.
No, why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, since 2010, when, you know, really things exploded in Santa Cruz and Marin County and a lot of other places in California, and have continued since then, Naperville, Illinois, the municipal utility, just 30 miles outside Chicago, and they've been particularly aggressive at putting opt-out fees very high, making the opt-out meters an electronic version that is also making people sick, and also a fire risk, and just, you know, really, really trying to force these things down people's throat. And there's been a federal lawsuit, and about, I think, 1,000 people in the community have been refusing the meters and been under increasing pressure from the city. So there's a federal lawsuit, federal litigation ongoing. The city's saying the meters are unconstitutional, and people should not be forced to have one of these, you know, hazardous devices on their homes if they don't want one. And so in the midst of all this, yesterday the utility came in, supported by the police, forcibly installing smart meters on, I think they said 700 homes, and threatening people with arrest if they intervened at all. And two mothers, Kim Bendis and Jen Stahl, were arrested. And I just spoke with Kim, and she reports that she was filming her friend Jen saying, you know, no, getting in the way of the installer, saying, you know, get off my property, and they're arresting Jen, and they say to Kim, give me your camera. You know, stop filming, give me your camera. So she takes out the SD chip with all the data, and it gives them the camera. It says, here's the camera. And they're like, we don't want that. And so apparently three cops, wrested the SD chip with the video of the arrest out of her hands. And they pushed her against a tree, and this is a new level in the smart grid saga, and a really like chilling one, and should make everyone take pause, and, you know, we need to nip this in the bud, because if this is allowed to stand unchallenged, you know, it could set a very dangerous precedent, forcing, you know, hazardous devices on your home.
It's so like, what are they charged with, these two women?
I think. Well, Illinois has some crazy law about electronic surveillance. Like, you're not allowed to video the cops, even though that's been overturned and is in dispute. There's lawmakers that are trying to get that in. And so they've been charged with illegal surveillance, and I think Kim was charged with resisting arrest, which is what they throw in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have anything to stick to.
Now, I guess nobody videoed the arrest of the person getting... who had her camera seized, or had her...
I believe there is a video out there. I don't think it's been posted, but we'll post it on stopsmartmeters.org as soon as we get it.
Oh, okay. So if people want... Again, this goes at what? Smartmeters.org is where to go for this?
Stopsmartmeters.
Sorry.
Stop.org, plural, yeah.
Stopsmartmeters.org.
Stopsmartmeters, yeah. Not start smart meters or smart meters, but...
So, you know, we talked a lot about... Honorable Sheriff Wowak and his sort of similar activity, although I don't know if it was as violent, because I don't know if the resistance was as persistent or the invasions as overt here in Santa Cruz County. But was there not a resolution passed a year or two ago that essentially said stop putting in the smart meters unless people want them in, or maybe even it was a moratorium generally? And then people protested that, tried to barricade it or to boycott it or to set up picket lines, and they were dispersed by the sheriffs.
You got it more or less right. Yeah, there was an ordinance passed by Santa Cruz County, the first county to pass a law specifically prohibiting smart meters, and this was in due course ignored by PG&E and the PUC, who came in like a two-ton gorilla throwing it and threatening with major lawsuits if they enforced the ordinance. And so when it came down to it in summer of 2011, Sheriff Wowak, instead of standing with the local elected officials and the ordinance that was passed that made smart meter installation illegal, actually facilitated the PG&E installation and waved the trucks out of the yard, clearing away protesters and arresting people. So that and through the course of the last couple of years, you know, we've made a Freedom of Information Act request to Sheriff Wowak's office and regarding his communications with PG&E in coordination with Wellington Energy, the installation company. And the letter we got back was, we'll just need $5,000 for photocopying fees for our secretary to help you out with that. So that wasn't terribly encouraging.
So you stopped there because that's a bogus.
Yeah.
I mean that's not, you know, they can only charge you for copying costs, and that's not copying costs. You might want to talk to John Colby, who has been quite determined and fastidious about Public Records Act requests, which is the state version of the federal, FOIA, Freedom of Information Act requests, and just. You know, he's been able to do, you just have to keep following up with a subsequent request referring to another section of the ordinance saying, and this is here, and you need to do this, and so forth and so on. So you might want to, particularly if you've got a fairly large and, determined ongoing group, is your group still got the force and numbers that it had before? Are you?
It's growing.
It's growing.
Mm-hmm. Robert, it's gone like way beyond Santa Cruz or California, and it's international now. And so we're working as part of a network of folks around the country and around the world who are fighting these things and fighting smart grid deployments.
How successful are you at fighting them? Have you been able to stop them anywhere?
Well, there's pushback in Maine. The Maine Stop Smart Meters folks basically. Taken the issue to the Maine Superior Court, and the Superior Court said the Public Utilities Commission has to consider the health effects of smart meters, has to consider radio frequency illness, has to consider whether these things are safe. They can't just say, well, the FCC says it's safe, so therefore, we consider it safe. And this was, this was because of a suit brought by ratepayers.
Say that again?
This was a suit that was brought by ratepayers, including Ed Friedman in Maine. There are certainly whole areas, including Fairfax and Marin, parts of Marin County, that are still free of the meters. There's 250,000 people at least, according to what we can gather from PG&E's records, who have refused smart meters in California and have just sat on their analogs, refusing permission for PG&E to access, refusing to pay. And, if yesterday's actions in Naperville are any indication, I think that's what PG&E would very much like to do in California and other places, other utilities in other places. And
You mean thug their way into people's homes with the assistance of the police?
Yeah, absolutely. Force their way in and mm-hmm. say, we're gonna do this whether you like it or not, and it's no longer your property, and you no longer have jurisdiction. And you don't get much more of a violation of civil liberties than that. It's this is really alarming what went on in Naperville, and ACLU is hopefully gonna help out and expressed a real interest in this case.
Has the local ACLU had any interest in assisting you on smart meters issues?
There are ACLU Hawaii has gotten involved. Other ACLU offices in the East Coast, I believe, have gotten involved. We haven't had a whole lot of luck convincing ACLU in California to take it on as a constitutional issue.
What about
these are like major violations of the Constitution that are happening in Naperville, and it's uh-huh. really startling, you know. I mean,
it is, yeah. But I'm trying to focus on, you know, what's happening in Santa Cruz. I mean, it looks like the battle has been largely lost in most parts of California. Is that an accurate assessment? I don't want to be a defeatist here, but I want to be accurate about what's actually going on.
Well, I think that, you know, if you look at the numbers, 90% of electric meters have been, and gas meters have been deployed in PG&E territory. But, you know, 10% is a large number, you know, when you talk about 10 million. I think that the momentum is building. The awareness is growing. I think there's a simmering sort of disgust at the utility industry over the smart grid and, you know, where that's going to lead in terms of, you know, people seeking alternatives. I think until people get so disgusted in large numbers, you know, we start, you know, going off the grid and forming our own sort of energy system locally rather than depending on far-flung,
you know,
networks like PG&E.
I referred actually someone to you today, and I talked to you about her on the phone, who had thought this was all pretty much, you know, I don't know, hysteria, imagination, exaggeration, zealotry on the part of those opposing smart meters, but then began to find, because she was sleeping very near a smart meter, all kinds of peculiar health effects on her, a number of them. She talked to me about this last night. I think I have smart meters on the place I'm renting somewhere, and who knows, maybe it's impacting me, maybe it's not. It's often, you know, you kind of integrate this into other things that happen, and you don't even, you know, attribute it to what it might be attributed to. But has there been an upsurge in any health complaints in the last year in Santa Cruz County that you know of?
It's been a steady drumbeat since they installed them. I mean, it was just really sad. Like, there were people who were injured by the meters, you know, especially people who were sleeping in bedrooms next to a bank of meters.
What kind of injuries are we talking about?
We're talking about, like, extreme sensitivity. I mean, you know, not being able to be around cell phones or Wi-Fi or just, like, any or cell towers or any of the ambient, you know, radiation that's out there right now. And really people running for their lives. And, you know, heart syndromes, there's a variety of, you know, headaches. And part of the problem, I think, part of the sort of the image problem that the smart meter movement has sort of had is that there's, number one, there are so many problems with the meters. It's not just health. It's privacy. It's overcharging. It's fires, you know, fire danger, all this stuff. It sounds ridiculous. It sounds as if, like, you know, we're making it up. You know, we're, like, exaggerating, but it's, like, it really is that bad.
How many fires in the last year in Santa Cruz County do you attribute to smart meters?
You know, it's hard to say. There's a lot of electrical fires that remain undiagnosed, as it were. But, you know, there have been a number of instances in the Bay Area, including a fire in Vacaville where a 57-year-old man died.
But none in Santa Cruz County so far?
Let me think about that one. Not to my knowledge.
Okay, how about in terms of the privacy violations, how many privacy violation complaints have you received in the last year in Santa Cruz County that you're aware of?
Well, how do you mean that? Because that's,
people calling, you know, up, you know, contacting smartmeters.org or making complaints through other agencies that you're aware of in Santa Cruz County.
The privacy and the overcharging and the fire stuff are all sort of, like, you know, lingering concerns. But the most urgent thing that people are, you know, really needing help with on a continuing and increasing basis is the health effects.
Okay, like, let's take those health effects. What's the, you know, first of all, the volume, you've already given something about the nature of the complaints. So what's the volume of complaints
year? We haven't been able to get accurate. We've been doing these California Records Act requests to the CPUC. We've asked them for updated data, and they've taken about 4 months now without giving us any part of the data request. So we don't know exactly, but I believe at last count there have been at least 10,000 individual health complaints registered with the CPUC. It's probably far more than that at this point.
That's statewide, right?
That's statewide, yeah.
What about in Santa Cruz County?
We're probably in the hundreds. I mean, we've received hundreds of complaints from this area, and are, you know, in some cases having to help, you know, relocate people to safer areas without so much radiation, because we're talking about people not suddenly who are, have, you know, professional careers. In the worst cases, I mean, not everything is this bad. I don't want to exaggerate, but in some cases, it's been really tragic. People with professional careers just lose it, and they need help. We need to help find housing for them, help find, you know, a safe place without wireless for them to go, without electricity in many cases, you know, and it's absolutely a violation of their human rights, you know, to be able to live.
So what about in the last, again, I'm trying to, you know, you're making broad concerns that may well be true. The question I'm having, again, is I'm trying to get as specifically as I can what's happening here in Santa Cruz. And,
I mean, you know, if you want to have someone, you know, I can refer you to any number of people in Santa Cruz County who are suffering this from on an ongoing basis. Take one example. There's a woman who lives in, she's from England. She lives in subsidized housing in Santa Cruz. Ever since the smart meter went in, she's had ringing in her ears that will not stop, and she's reported it to the management. She's done what she can to get people to opt out. She's, you know, done all this stuff. So I think a few months ago there was a power outage in Santa Cruz. So she wakes up, suddenly the ringing is gone. She's like, oh, it's great. And then she looks over at her, you know, digital alarm clock, and it's flashing. She realizes, oh, you know, the smart meters are off. And you know, she's unable to move, unable to find alternate housing, unable to get, you know, the management to change the meters in the locked room. I mean, and people are living with this on an ongoing basis, and in many cases medicating because of it, you know. So it's disturbing on a number of levels, including adding to the homeless population, you know, people who are unable to cope, and, you know.
Any, but you have no sense of the number of complaints in the last year compared with years before, let's say?
You know what, Rod? It's like it's been a deluge since we started this thing back in 2010. I mean, it's terrible.
Is there any change in the number month by month over the last 24 months?
I'll have our analysis people get back to you.
Okay. I may sound like I'm trying to be, you know, I don't know, picky, but I am trying to understand. I mean, what's happened in Santa Cruz County, as I understand it, is they put in smart meters virtually everywhere that they wanted to, and you would think that if this is as serious a health issue as you and others think it is, there would be a massive increase in complaints about health problems.
Well, we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about health issues, we're talking about number one, immediate health injuries, immediate injuries that are taking place to people, and then you know, and they're reporting that, and they're reporting feeling those injuries, and having to take, you know, adaptive measures in their lives to cope with it, and then we're talking about longer term, and the middle term is more concerning because, you know, you're talking about leukemia. You're talking about levels of various cancers. You know, it's there's an absolute biological pathway.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you, Josh, because I don't even really dispute a lot of what you're saying. You're jumping. You know, mm-hmm. I'm asking you a difficult question, and you're moving on to something else. You've done this a couple times in this conversation. You know, I think it's fair to say you don't have the data, which is okay. You know, I mean, I don't expect you to, I called you, talked to each other an hour ago.
Well, what data,
an upsurge in the immediate health consequences in the last 24 months in Santa Cruz County when we know there's certainly been an upsurge in the number of smart meters that have been installed, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, to a large extent, the fears that were expressed by Santa Cruz County residents who were aware of the effects of EMF and all this before, you know, when they installed the meters, you know, you started hearing, you know, many, many people report symptoms. And people have either
Do you have any specific stats, though, is my question. And it's okay not to, because I'm not catching you, you know, in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the, you know, it's not a question you should be asking me. It's a question you should be asking the health department. And, you know, Pokey Namkung, who worked for the health department and issued a very damning report on smart meters and health, calling the FCC limits, you know, irrelevant. And I believe she no longer works for the health department, but they're the ones who should be tracking these complaints.
I mean, insofar as this is an issue of great concern to you and probably of less concern to me because of my focus on other things, I assume you would have this kind of information pretty much at your fingertips because it's an important information if it exists. You've made some legitimate, I think, concerns that I've experienced. When I make Public Records Act requests of the police department and other agencies, I often run into serious obstructions and evasions and excuses and all kinds of crap, which prevent me from getting the data. On the other hand, sometimes I do get the data. So if you have the data, I'm looking for straight answers on this. And right now, not trying to be mean or nasty, I don't think I'm getting it from you. You know, you're not.
Well, that's only because we're not getting it from the public agency.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
You can talk to the California Public Utilities Commission, and you can contact the California Department of Public Health.
So you're saying that you don't have the data that indicates an upsurge in these illnesses because they're not providing it to you, but that would also indicate, are people calling you directly? I mean, it sounds like some people are.
We have direct reports from about 1,500 people from all
have those
the
direct reports and changed in terms of the rate they've been coming in over the last 2 years is my question.
Well, obviously, as you know, as a smart meter epidemic, let's call it, has spread across the country, there's going to be more people reporting.
That's reversing the order of determining whether something is really happening or not.
I think, Robert, you're trying to, you know, your scientific mind is. Getting in the way of your heart on this one.
I'm putting you through a grilling because I want to get strong data.
It's unpleasant, and I'm going to get off the phone. So.
Okay, I'm not trying to make you feel bad, Josh. I think it's an important service you're providing, and I think the concerns you have are important ones. You still there?
Yeah.
And so I wish next time we talk, if you can, if you have data that, you know, I mean, if you might, say, you know, we've gotten a number of, you know, anecdotal reports and either they've been increasing in Santa Cruz, remaining steady, or possibly people are getting sick and getting discouraged, not calling in. I mean, there are all kinds of explanations for why the reports may not be coming to you in increasing numbers, but it is still something that you should face head on, I think. And I'm not trying to make you, you know, look bad. I am trying to, you know, help people who are uncertain about this come to some conclusions on this.
No, I mean, it's reasonable questions. I mean, we haven't done the analysis to specifically chart, like, month by month how the complaints from Santa Cruz County have been going.
Do you have a sense of that at all? I mean, you may not do an analysis, but are you thinking, like, more? Is there more than 2 years ago? Is there less? Is it the same? People can, you know, and that doesn't mean that the damage is less, necessarily. It just may mean, I mean, I know, you know, people have stopped doing protest actions, not necessarily because the abuses have stopped, but because people are chilled, people are distracted, people are scared, people aren't doing too well, you know. So
I mean, I think that you know, the electrosensitivity particularly has increased, as we've seen not only, you know, deployment of smart meters, but also DAS going in, which are distributed antenna systems, the 4G. Mainly Verizon is doing it right now through a company called Crown Castle, but you know, going up everywhere, and so we're you know, the amount of radiation is being exponentially increased that we're exposed to, and there is a great, you know, debate about what to do about that. You know,
how can people get more involved if they want to and get more information about this?
StopSmartMeters.org has a lot of, you know, information and frequently asked questions, contacts, and links to other sites. So, you know, start there. EMF Safety Network is another good one. There's a ton of them out there.
Hey, thank you very much. And, you know, come back with more data or less data. And don't worry about the kinds of questions from us scientific-minded or those of us who think we're scientific-minded here. I know a number of people who agree with you, whose experiential reports I put a lot of credit in. But I do, you know, I am trying also to get a broader sense of what's actually happening statistically, insofar as we have any information.
Well, Robert, if you would like to volunteer to come over to my house and analyze the data,
can you email it to me?
Yeah, I could actually. Yeah.
I'm not saying, I mean, I got so much data I'm trying to analyze. It seems to me, though, that, frankly, that's something that it might behoove you to do, because it's something that it would be helpful to put out when, you know, cranks like myself put you on the radio.
Yeah. It would be.
And if you could find somebody who has the time or interest, you know, if you email me the data, I'll pass it on. Maybe I can pass it on to other people who will take the time and energy to do that, because I think that is important to do.
Yeah, volunteer with your local advocacy organization people.
Yeah, yeah. And then we're talking stopsmartmeters.org. We've been talking with Josh Hart. Josh, do appreciate your taking the hot seat for a little while.
Okay. Have a good evening, Ron.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I'm going to search around for a little music so we could take a musical break. Still in the studio with me, in case people have any further questions, are perhaps as yet unimpacted by smart meters directly, at least not out in the Poganep so much. We have Wade and Zeke. I haven't talked to Zeke about it, but he's difficult to approach on these issues because I don't speak. So I can't really tell you what his thoughts are.
He just looked up when you did your.
Well, of course, I'm. You know, I'm a novice at. So I don't really have a lot of information. Anyway, if you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. You had problems with smart meters, some thoughts about this discussion. You want to talk about other issues, make other announcements that are pertinent to the upcoming week. I know that, as I've already mentioned already, there's a Food Not Bombs feeding on Saturday that I think deserves community support at the post office at 4 o'clock, which I encourage people to go to. They're going to be, I'm sure, other things coming up. Let's listen to a little Annie DeFranco, and then you'll hear more of me. And well, that's always exciting, as you know.
Maybe we never were as close as we should have been. But I didn't know what I know now then. Yeah, I didn't know what I know now then. But I didn't know what I know now then. But I didn't know what I know now then.
And that was No, Now, Then. No, K-N-O-W, No, Now, Then by Ani DiFranco in the album Up, 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 Up. And you may have missed the lyrics. I did, as I often do with Ani DiFranco. Here they are. It's not so much that we got closer. It's that her face just got bigger. And by the time it was filling up my whole view, I figured my face had got bigger, too. So I used to try and sway her, say something to her, make my case, but my face never had a chance. All along it was the wrong song and dance. I just stood there without even a stance, helpless to her advance and her retreat, backspace, delete. It wasn't so much that we fell in love as my life just seemed to come down to a slow walk on a straight line between her smile and her frown. And maybe we never were as close as we should have been. But I didn't know what I know now then. Yeah, I didn't know what I know now then. That's the song, No Now Then. Ani DiFranco, and you're tuned to Free Radio. Let's hear something from the, the time and place where I actually ran into you for the first time, Wade. Let's hear how that goes.
Here's Renee Curry, and who is this questionable woman next to you, the evil and much-hated Brianna Brewer?
Yes, criminal number one here on the street, the one that the police go straight after. I personally think it's just because she's so hot, and she knows what pigs they are.
Have there been any such incidents today?
So far, no.
How long have you been out here?
We have been here about an hour, I'm going to say, but we're only...
And actually, this is not at the Red Church. This is actually, I think, the Sunday or Saturday before, probably the Sunday before the last Monday. It was last Sunday, and we're talking about Pacific Avenue, where I had been concerned that Brianna Brewer, who's, as I mentioned before, an artisan and a... performer on Pacific Avenue who has been hassled by police and hosts for her dogs. Her dog. I think she has a dog. I mean, she has one dog. Might have more than one dog. But in any case, dogs that have essentially that are service animals that are being used as the pretext to run her off. Now she faces a disturbing the peace ticket because she objected to this kind of harassment after a judge threw out all these charges and said Americans with Disabilities Act allows her to have these animals be there without any kind of question or demand for documentation. So Ricardo Lopez, who you hear talking on the tape, is a performer often in front of New Leaf Market, sometimes down in front of Forever 21, sometimes further down, who is a colleague of Brianna's.
Get a claim a half an hour.
So you haven't been warned to move along?
No, we haven't.
And you're actually here in front of the edge of Forever 21. Any, it looks like a Slim Pickens in the guitar case.
Today, but Rihanna is making money with this lovely white sage that she brought back from down in Southern California from her secret oasis. She's got a secret white sage patch that's been passed on in her family from her ancient great-great-great-grandmother, who is a 100% Native American.
The real question, though, is have you been back to the library, Ricardo?
You know, I have, but...
And the reason I ask Ricardo this question is because he reported an incident at the library where he left his backpack unattended to go use the computer, had it confiscated, and got into a serious interaction with the library on this issue, feeling upset about it, and felt, when I last talked to him, really uncomfortable with going back to the library at all. The library, as you know, downtown library, has recently changed its rules, making it easier for staff to suspend people's privileges for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, where previously they could only do a one-month suspension or try to get some kind of injunctive relief via the city attorney. And for those who are interested, I was able finally to get the complaint record for the last year to see if this change in the rules was justified by the particular complaint record. I have not yet been able to get through the record of complaints, and there are actually reports of both complaints and accidents in the library, and also they cover all the libraries in the county system, so it's quite a bundle of documents to go through, but it is sitting at the desk of the City Council offices at 809 Center Street, which is right across from the main library at City Hall. And all you have to do if you want to look at some of these documents is walk in, say, I'd like to see the Robert Norris requested complaint library file so I can take a look at these complaints myself. And I know a number of people were interested in this issue, did go to the Library Affairs Board, called the Joint Trust Library Board. I'm never quite sure what that name is. And you can see for yourself at least the complaints that they are willing to show us. It's quite a number of them, mostly very minor and mostly not involving the police or even any suspension of library privileges. I encourage people to go check them out because my time is limited too, and I've so far only been able to give them a casual glance, but they are there for people to look at, and I'm glad that Teresa Landers, the chief librarian, has finally supplied them. And that's good. Again, they'll be available during office hours, 8 to 12, 1 to 5, at the City Council offices for the next couple of weeks. So go check them out. And when you've done, give a call to the Huff line and tell me what thoughts you have about that. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And then we'll get back to Ricardo on Pacific Avenue in front of Forever 21, where he was sitting next to Brianna Brewer, who was... had bunches of sage in front of her, sage woman that she is.
You know, you had some problems there before. You're unattended property.
Yeah.
Do you still have problems at the library?
Yeah, I still have problems at the library. The library isn't designed for people. It's just some hyphy. That lady is horrible. The head of the library is way, way, way beyond, her usefulness to the...
Did you talk to her?
Nobody talks to her. She doesn't talk. Have you noticed? She doesn't talk.
Have you tried to talk to her?
Yes. And I'm not the only one.
Tell me how that went.
She just sits there. She doesn't say anything. I believe that she's having a petite mal seizure. She's probably had a stroke.
When was the last time you tried to talk to her?
Just the other day. She just sits there. I try to complain about things, about my stuff being taken. She just sits there. She doesn't say a word.
Where is her office for those who want to go talk to her?
I don't know. I catch her behind the desk at the, what do they call that? Where you can't take the books out of the library.
Reference section.
Reference section of the library. That's right.
You sure you're talking about the same person? You know who this actually is, what her name is?
Little old lady with, she's got like her bangs cut straight across her face, glasses, and hair about shoulder length. And she's really wrinkled up, right?
The woman who's the head of the library at the moment is Teresa Landers. I have no idea if that's her or not. I really have bad visual memory.
Yeah.
But also you say that... we're saying something else. What was it?
I had one jump in the other day. Me and this guy are having a discussion. Me and one of the librarians, and we're just bitching about these computers. And I said, what we need to do, I said to the librarian calmly, I said, 66% of our budget goes to these pigs. I said, we need to fire a handful of pigs. All beach cities have way too many pigs. Everyone knows that. Fire a few of them.
It should be noted that the word pigs here does not refer to barnyard animals who are reportedly very intelligent, not to mention good to eat, for those of us who are carnivores, but to police officers armed with guns, tasers, and other implements of war.
Fix these computers. The guy's agreeing with me. The dumb little guard. These guards are too stupid to be policemen.
Is this the big guy, the tall guy?
No, that's Big Dumb John. Big Dumb John. Anyway, no, this is the little stupid one, too stupid to be a real pig. Jesus, and pigs are stupid anyway. They have no education. Anyway, the guy steps in and says, hey, if you're going to have attitude, you're going to have to leave the library. I said, no, I'm not going to have to leave the library. And I had to correct him right there in public. Said, you just didn't like what I said.
At which point he says...
Oh, no, I told him, look, you're not even in this discussion, butt out.
Right. At which point did he butt out?
He tried a couple more things, but I'm much quicker witted than that dull wit. You know, it's easy for me to say things to him to make him stop and stand there open mouth as I explained to him. He said, you're getting loud. I said, no, I wasn't. You're just making that up in your lying excuse-making way that pigs have been taught to do, to say, oh, this person was doing this and this because... I said, you didn't like what I said, but what I said is above you. You don't know anything at all about how city government works.
Now, you, last time you were in the library, we discussed this, they were suggesting because you went to the computer after leaving, I don't know, your backpack.
No, they're stealing people's stuff. It's illegal as hell. All we have to do is get a lawyer on that, and they'll stop.
Better, easier said than done. But have you brought your stuff back into the library? Are you keeping it out of the library?
I know. If we had a lawyer... That's the problem. We don't have any lawyers here, and that's why we're getting stepped on. Until we get lawyers in the state with the most lawyers,
could this woman be a lawyer? We better go investigate. Are you a lawyer, madam?
She's going to play me.
She has nothing. She's a musician. What about you, sir? I mean, madam. Who are you?
Oh, I'm no lawyer.
You're no lawyer, but you have a lot of sage in front of you.
I do.
And have you been successful at exchanging sage?
And, of course, we're talking now with Brianna Brewer, who is the individual I've talked about before, who has gotten her share of harassment, according to her account and that of Ricardo Lopez and others, from the hosts and from police officers, and faces a charge, misdemeanor charge, up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine of disturbing the peace for, in essence, talking back with some heat to Denise Miller, the chief hostility woman on the scene.
The Greenbacks.
It's been okay today.
And what about your favorite hostess, Denise Miller? Has she been wandering by?
I've not seen her today.
You offered her a little? No, you haven't.
I assume she's probably just not on duty since I haven't seen her.
See. So what about other police officers and hosts? Have they wandered by?
They have not said anything to me as of yet.
But they have dropped by without having stopped?
They harassed a kid sitting next to us by the tree here.
What did they do with that? What was that situation about?
They told him he couldn't sit there. They were pretty good.
I see a small pooch lying there under the bench. Do you think that dog will be arrested before the end of the day?
Unlikely. I was just warning the kids not have him tied to the bench so that they could ticket him for that.
And what about your dog? Last time you were here, you had an incident again with the dog.
I didn't bring him with me because I'm tired of...
fighting the police and the hosts on the...
harassment.
But this is your service, emotional pooch.
Yeah, he is. It sucks. It's difficult.
Anything else you've noticed today? By the way, I played your interview yesterday on Free Radio.
Not yet. Knock on wood.
Or on cement, as the case may be. We've been talking with...
Brianna Brewer.
Thank you, Brianna. So I'm here in front of Marini, is talking with...
Tanya Noble.
And Tanya, you're sitting here comfortably on the sidewalk in a rather pleasant kind of sunny scene, but you've been requesting people a cup of coffee of the citizenry as they pass by. Is this something you've done before?
Yes.
And how long does it usually take you to get somebody to come up and offer you a cup of Java?
10-15 minutes.
And you get hassled by police or hosts or anybody else for doing this?
No.
And for how long have you been doing this for?
About a year.
And how often do you do it?
Every day.
And so it takes about 15 minutes to make a cup of coffee?
Yep.
Well, I'm going to wish you luck and toast your health.
Okay.
Thank you. And we've been talking with?
Tanya Noble.
Thank you, Tanya. I'm music in front of the Pacific Trading Company.
Don't you know I never want to come back up?
First of January, I'm here outside the Red Church at about 5:45, talking with
Irish.
And Irish, you have your pooch with you. Is straining at the leash?
No, she's not.
She seems to be pulling you toward the church. Is this a religious dog?
No.
No, she knows where the food is.
Oh, the food. So, Irish, you had a report about something being, quote, retarded. Are you talking about our city council, perhaps?
Well, yeah, kind of. But I think it's retarded, dude, that we can't, you know, skateboard on the street in Pacific. I mean, I can understand the sidewalk. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to run into somebody either. I wouldn't want somebody to run into me. But, I mean, I think it's retarded and dumb, dude. Like, why can't we skateboard on the street?
In the bike lane.
Yeah, in the bike lane. On Pacific.
These are the questions that trouble youth today.
They've been troubling me for a while. Like, since I got here, since December 14th.
Have you been hassled for skateboarding on the sidewalk? Or, I mean, on the street?
Yes, actually, I have.
And when was the last time this happened?
Last week.
What happened?
I was skateboarding, and he looked at me, and he goes, dude, seriously? You're going to skateboard on Pacific? You know you're not allowed to do that. I said, I know I'm not allowed to do that.
And who told you this?
A police officer. I don't know what his name was. I didn't care at the time. But I told him, I said, but I think it's kind of retarded, dude, that we can't skateboard on the street. I can understand the sidewalk, but we can't do it on the street? Really?
And what did he say to that?
He said, don't be homeless then.
Is that what he said?
Yes, it is.
You're not making that up?
No, I'm not.
All right, then. And we've been getting a report from the well-known but little-beloved
Irish.
Well, perhaps much-loved in some quarters.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And we have another woman here who's in a wheelchair. Your name, miss?
Judy.
What's up, Judy? Any reports?
I agree with him. I've seen cops harass even the younger generation that have homes, that live in their houses or apartments, can't ride a skateboard on the sidewalk or in the street. And it's a bunch of bullshit.
What have you seen this week that has struck you, if anything?
Skateboarding's not fun.
Cars that peel out in front of cops, they don't do nothing. They can stop them. Run stoplights, they don't stop them. But it's homeless. We cross the street in the crosswalk. Guaranteed we're going to... crossing the street. Cop walked up and said, what are you doing? And he was in the crosswalk.
Which crosswalk, which street?
Pacific Avenue.
And do you remember where that was?
No, I don't. Somewhere on Pacific Avenue.
And what happened then?
She got a ticket.
What was her ticket for?
I have no idea. I had to stick around. I had to go.
I got you.
I was in a hurry as it was.
Fair enough.
And, of course, you know, who wants to get involved in those situations when big guys with guns, tasers, and radio backup, not to mention courts, judges, and jails, are looming in the background. But I would encourage people who see this kind of thing happening to try to find out more specific details so they can talk about it on the radio or pass on a report to those of us who are interested in letting people know what the police are doing downtown, how their money is being spent, because police get a pretty hefty salary to do this kind of stuff. There's been an increasing amount of money going to the police and private security guards downtown, and you'll suddenly see a huge cluster of squad cars and cops for such minor things as open container, person sitting near a building, particularly if the person shows that they aren't about to jump up and say, yes, sir, three bags full, and submit to the authority of the police officer, even if it's unjustly used, inappropriately and unconstitutionally applied, or just plain abusively done. That, to me, it is a good thing when people resist in that way, and it shows the determination of the police force to impose fear and intimidation by numbers and the threat of force when they call out these absurdly numerous squad cars and cops to deal with situations that don't require that at all. And this, of course, is also a way of intimidating the public into believing that somehow there's something, some major crime thing going on that they have to, fork out more money to the police department about, or submit to the authority of the police to stop their cars, double park, do whatever they want on Pacific Avenue, even when there is no cause for it particularly. I've talked about this in the past, and you'll hear me talking about it again.
Thank you, Judy.
I still say the police department needs someone to come in and straighten them all out. But two.
Or maybe clean them all out, is the case, maybe.
That too. All but Romero and Baby Baker. Romero saved me from almost dying from having a grandma seizure off my bike. If it wasn't for her sirens, I would never come out of it. Just when they got me to the hospital for my broken leg in two spots.
That is indeed why you're in a wheelchair at the moment?
Yeah, because I can't use crutches. Because my bones are deteriorating, and my right shoulder is too.
So where do you sleep at night, Judy?
Private property on Mission.
And is that, have you been hassled for doing that?
No.
Oh, that's good. Are you alone or in company?
There's my husband and my son.
So you get some company, and presumably, if there's a problem, some protection.
Oh, most definitely.
How's the cold weather been treating you?
Don't bother me. Not at all.
Food services are, how are they in Santa Cruz for you?
They suck.
Now, what about the homeless lack of services meal twice a day?
They suck as well.
What about this Red Church meal?
I love it.
And the Elm Street Mission meal?
They suck.
And what about the St. Francis Soup Kitchen meal?
Mondays they suck. Tuesday, Thursday, it's okay.
What about Wednesdays and Fridays?
Wednesday's fine. Friday, I don't go.
Any other meals you go to, like the Sunday meals out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center?
You mean the shelter?
Yes, where there's the Sunday meals.
Saturday morning is good. Sunday morning is good. Monday through Friday, the usual. Oatmeal, cold cereal, whatever they throw on the truck.
Now, what about the, have you ever been out to the Circles Church on the weekend? How is that?
I went one time, and the food was, it was okay. Not the greatest.
How about Food Not Bombs?
Never been there. Never heard of it.
They are every Saturday at 4 o'clock at the post office.
I went by there this last Saturday, and I was on the run. That's when I seen you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe next Saturday, who knows?
Maybe, I don't know. See what happens.
It's kind of hard. They got steps. You're in a wheelchair. You can get someone to bring you some food, perhaps.
Maybe if I find the right person.
Well, thank you for talking with me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care. And we've been talking with?
Judy.
Thanks, Judy. We're talking with
Wade Ince.
And you have your pooch with you.
I have my dog. His name is Zeke.
And you and so what happened with you and Zeke?
Well, he's my PTSD dog, and he doesn't like traveling up the highway to the camp where we stay at. Mm-hmm. And Officer, can I name names?
Sure.
Officer Winston, trying to run him on the right side is non-existent because he has a bad left eye. So he's running up against my bike, and he tried to give me—he did give me a ticket for cruelty to animals, and I would never be mean to my service animal.
What did he claim was the cruel thing you did?
That I was making him squeak because I was actually tugging his leash and probably pulling him off the ground, but it's to get him up the hill because he's frightened to death that the cars come around the corners and stuff because his left eye is blind, and I'm also very, very hard of hearing. So on my left side, when the cars come up, I don't hear him all the time.
Did you explain this to Officer Winston?
All he kept telling me to say or do was shut up. Completely shut up, and he could take my dog, and you're gonna take my dog. I said, well, you have to shoot me or tase me. And he's like, just shut up, just plain shut up. That's all he could say. He wrote me a ticket for it.
When was this?
Two nights ago.
And where was this?
Right on the River Street, just coming up to the, just past there's like a public storage building.
And
well, the county yard.
Were you alone?
Yeah, I was alone, but I had the rest of my people I camped with. They were up the road, and he just let them go up ahead, and but because he is, his eyes messed up, he doesn't like to run on the right side. He put him on the left side. I tried to tell him. I said, can I run him for you on the left side and show you that it's not just, it's a right side thing because he's blind in the one eye. And he says, no, just shut up. I have a right mind to take your dog. That's all he kept saying. I want to take your dog. I'm going to take your dog.
That sounds like Officer Winston.
Pretty much just cruelty to humans, too, and animals at the same time.
So is your ticket, do you have a court date, or is it, say, a go within 30 days?
2:19 and 8:30 a.m.
If you want, come to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting on Wednesday at the Red Church, not the Red Church, at the Sub Rosa Cafe. You know where that is?
Yeah, by the bike church.
Yeah, here's the card. Gives you the times. If you want to come, we'll talk about it. I mean, that we can do a lot to help. I can publicize it. I'll be playing this on the radio probably Thursday night.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we've been. Yeah, you're welcome.
I like that. Someone to stick up for the homeless and the homeless animals that do them actually a service.
Well, I hope it's a service. I don't know how effective it is.
But I mean, he does me a service.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Zeke's great.
And again, we've been speaking with
Wade Ince.
Thanks, Wade.
So, Wade, any thoughts on anything you've heard on the show so far that you want to comment on? Or?
No, this is real cool.
Okay.
I need my own radio station.
Indeed, or, you know, we could. Anybody can join the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, but as I was telling you, you got to kick down $30 a month or do work equivalent to that, and then you have your own show, you come in, you do your own program, but that money helps essentially pay the rent for the studio, which is, we are still looking for a new place, I believe, although, who knows? I haven't been to the last meeting. Maybe there have been some changes since then. But if you want to donate to Free Radio or find out more about it or apply to be a part of Free Radio, go to freakradio.org. You can download an application. You can also come to one of our meetings. Give a call to me at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for more information, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I'll put you on the right path. But I think you're probably have all the information you need if you go to the Free Radio, freakradio.org website. Let's hear some more from Monday at the Red Church.
We're talking with two hippie nappers here. What do you mean by napping this hippie?
No comment.
No comment? Well, very well. This will be a mystery that we'll have to unravel later on. So we're talking with
Scott Curry, Renee's husband.
Scott, I see Renee is here at the lectern. I guess she's already given her religious propaganda of the day.
Yeah, we try to stay with just the truth.
Good, yes. So that's what all these guys say, all these mullahs and pastors, worldwide, they're all talking the truth, right? I wonder why so many people are dead because of what they say. We can't get into that. But, you know, you do serve food on Sundays downtown in front of River 21. What time do you usually do that?
Well, recently our burritos have been pushed back, so we're going to be down there more close to 1:30, 2 o'clock. But we had been going there earlier, but like I say, the food is a little bit later, been pushed back a little.
You weren't there this last Sunday, yesterday, because you thought they might need the food here, because we do have quite a long line today.
And we usually try to make sure that we give the burritos here once a month so that they have some stock, and if they don't use it on this Monday, then they'll use it next Monday or to supplement whenever their food budget is off a little bit. So apparently the burritos freeze well and come out of freezing well and taste good.
Is
still
shrimp crab burritos with a hollandaise sauce?
Well, yeah, they're not quite that fancy, although they are well liked.
I know that a couple of weeks ago I got reports that people were being given tickets or sitting on the sidewalk, and then a week or two before that, Renee was told she had to move along every hour, but that apparently has not been repeated.
It hasn't been repeated, and actually throughout the years that we've been down there, the police have actually been really, really super reasonable with us, and it's been really good. It seems like whenever something crops up, like some violence, that people get fearful about the homeless community, then they have to come and sort of
make a show of this and a show of that.
They kind of hold the rules to a stricter interpretation, and but even then they've been really respectful with us, and then we're not the type to normally argue unless there's a good reason. We don't die on every hill, so we have a pretty good relationship with them, and it's been good.
So you've heard about Food Not Bombs being attacked by the told that they couldn't serve food at the post office on Saturday.
You know, over the years, it seems like Food Not Bombs has been focused on a lot. And I don't know if there's a specific reason why. it might be that, you know, we prepare our food in a health certified kitchen, and I don't know if Food Not Bombs is doing that, and I don't know if that's the difference, you know.
Oh, they just said they're trespassing. That's all they said.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, I don't know. It's hard to trespass on a public sidewalk, and I think...
Not if it's owned by the federal government. You better follow the rules.
That's right. Although, we don't use the post office, though. I imagine if we went to the post office, they would do the same thing to us.
That's a ridiculous idea that the post office is public property. You have to clear it first with the postmaster. Only him and those who he authorizes are allowed on the property.
Well, apparently, if it's local taxes, like streets and sidewalks, that is public property we're allowed to use. But if it's federal taxes, which is like the steps of the post office, even though that's still tax money that came from the citizens, now we're not allowed to use that?
And actually, of course, it depends upon the whims of bureaucrats whether city property can be used. Parks and Rec, for instance, Danette Shoemaker, who heads the Parks and Rec Department, has the power to close down or set, this is euphemistically how it's known, set closing hours or operational hours for areas along Pacific Avenue, in all the parks, at City Hall, and in other places around the city. In the numerous parking lots, where it's now illegal to sit and read a book in your car if it's one of those public parking lots. You're not allowed to do that. For those who are new to the city, you must park or retrieve your vehicle within 15 minutes, and that's all you're allowed to do, or you are in violation of the municipal code. Also, you can't be at City Hall reading the agenda, which is the only place the agendas of the City Council and other city bodies is publicly posted, is at the City Hall that I'm aware of. Yet, if you go there after 10 o'clock to read it, you can be arrested or cited for being in a closed area, an action taken by Danette Shoemaker behind closed doors with Martine Bernal, the city manager, then Mayor Ryan Coonerty, and the police chief Kevin Vogel, in order to crush a homeless protest that was happening in 2010, in the summer there, Peace Camp 2010. So it's I mention this, which I've said before, because some people have this sort of idealistic notion that somehow they have the right to use public property as a member of the public without first asking, oh, please, sir, permission from the bureaucrats that are getting paid by the public to oversee the property. In fact, of course, you really do have the right. But if you want to assert that right, you've got to be prepared to stand up for it and to perhaps sacrifice something for it. We'll see what happens on Saturday around that issue at the federal post office when Food Not Bombs serves its meal at 4 o'clock.
It's an interesting question, which perhaps the postmaster will take up next week. You can come down there and observe for yourself democracy in action.
I might have to observe that, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that that one tax-supported sidewalk would be different than another tax-supported sidewalk.
Well, it's not the sidewalk. They're talking about the steps of the post office.
That's
now,
right.
After all, they don't want the wrong kind of people hanging around that place. Might frighten away the people trying to mail their letters.
I'll tell you, it seems to me, so long as you're not blocking people from getting in and out, and one thing that we always try to do is we'll help to clean up and make sure there's not a mess left behind, and if anybody's, you know, in any way intimidating people, that's rationally could be considered intimidating people, we work with those people and make sure that that's not the case. But, you know, some people are intimidated even if nothing's going on, you know, so just a group of people they have an issue with.
What about Mayor Hillary Bryant? Has she been down to help you serve burritos on the sidewalk?
If she has, she has not identified herself.
Incognito. She's always very modest, Hillary. So modest, she never responds to any of my emails.
And although it's true that Mayor Hillary Bryant has not responded to my emails, I do want to report that when I went into the City Council offices yesterday to read the library complaints that I mentioned to a few minutes ago, I learned that Hillary Bryant was in the back, and so I wrote out another request, I think it was my fourth or fifth request, to meet with her, to interview her for free radio, to have some questions answered, to find out when her regular office hours were. And I was very surprised. She walked out, shook my hand, and we made an appointment for Monday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Politicians will shake your hand. There's nothing new in that. I'm sometimes causing you to want to go wash them afterward. I didn't feel that way with Hillary Bryant. I'd never really talked. I've talked to her like
briefly in passing, like two or three times in my life. And so I said, well, she first wanted assurance that the meeting would not be tape recorded. I said, no, I'll probably tape record it, but not for broadcast unless you allow me to broadcast it. But I want it for my notes, and I want it to be able to accurately quote you. And she continued to kind of, well, I would really prefer, you know, that this not be taped. And I said, well, I understand your preference, but I think you'll be able to handle it. It's not a problem, really. You know, I just want to make sure that in instances like the Bike Dojo issue, where there's been a lot of controversy because there have been claims that the bikes have been cut off to the bike church by people connected with you via the police department for not necessarily profiteering uses, but there has been some concern that profits are taking the place of nonprofits here and that bikes aren't getting out to poor groups. And I don't want to be misquoting you because I've talked to some angry supporters of yours, Hillary, who claim that, you know, I'm spreading misinformation about you. I don't want to do that. So we'll see what happens on Monday when I go in to have this interview. It's going to be very brief, and it's not, again, I won't be playing it on the air unless she gives me permission to do it. I think, you know, there's not really, you heard me, if you were listening to the interview with Josh Hart about 20 minutes ago, ask him some questions that I didn't think were particularly hard, but that did bear upon the issues that he was pressing. And I think he felt embarrassed that I, you know, was pressing so hard and felt I wasn't getting a straight answer. And I don't think I was. But, you know, I generally don't waste a lot of time with rhetoric against mayors. First of all, mayors aren't, as Hillary said to me the other day, and she's right, they're not the real executive officer of the city. Although they set the agenda, they are the sort of the face of the city in public events in many respects. But it's the city manager who gets paid the $200,000+ a year. A mayor gets paid a tenth of that or some such thing, much less. And it is the city manager who controls the hiring and firing of people like the police chief. I don't know if he hires and fires the city attorney, but all the other top executives like Danette Shoemaker mentioned before, head of the Parks and Rec, and other city bosses who really run the city. So I also encourage people, if they have the questions they want to ask Bryant, you can. I would encourage you to call her up, 420-5020. You can call her at all hours. You won't reach her, but you'll reach an answering machine. And ask that she call you back to set an appointment time. She claims that she has public appointments, public office hours, even though it's not at a regular time. She used to have them, she said, at the Natural History Museum or some such thing. And that, for some reason, became difficult for her to do. So, but she did say those would be available for people who want to talk with her. I've often wondered, is it worth talking to even Martine Bernal, the city manager, unless you have 50 people with you and people who are determined to hold these politicians and bureaucrats accountable, as we did a year and a half ago when Occupy Santa Cruz was actually in flower. We went to the city manager, Martine Bernal's office, and demanded to know why the bathrooms in the park weren't open. And we got waffling and whiffling and fliffling and floffling, and they still kept the bathrooms closed. But Don Lane said he supported keeping them closed. He's still on the city council. Catherine Byers was the only council member who supported opening up the San Lorenzo Park bathrooms for the Occupy campground area, and she, of course, left the council. Anyway, let's hear some more. And again, I urge you to contact Hillary Bryant if you want to just put pressure on her around some of these issues, that we need to have campgrounds, not cops, against the homeless around. We need facilities open. We need people being treated as human beings. We need perhaps even dog food for hungry dogs. You never can tell. Anyway, let's hear some more from Scott Curry in these interviews at the Red Church last Monday.
Well,
She probably has several different personalities that she could dress up at any given time.
No idea, actually. But she is the mayor. Of course, the real power in the city is Martin Bernal, our erstwhile Latino city manager.
Well, interestingly, because I don't live in the city proper, I haven't been able to keep up with all of the local politics, so I had no idea who the mayor was.
You probably couldn't care less at this time.
Well, not exactly, but I have to pick again which hills to die on, so I keep track more of the jurisdictions that I'm in. And
now, I saw you today kind of doing a prize fight activity earlier in the building. Is this going to be your new career, referee to various fights?
And actually, what I'm referring to here is for the first time ever in the Red Church, I saw one person hit another person. It was unusual. There was followed an angry exchange of words, and it quickly died down. But that's what this jocular comment refers to. Scott Curry stepped in, and the guy who met the people separated, the guy left who had thrown the blow, and it was, you know, sometimes in the heat of anger, blows get thrown. I'm not sure about the details. You weren't anywhere near that, Wade, when that happened, right?
I just walked out of the building.
You missed the fight.
I missed it.
You bought your ticket, but you didn't get in for the
fight.
But
I do know the two people that got into the scuffle there.
Yeah.
A little bit of blood.
Okay. But again, I've never seen that before at the Red Church, and it's very rare. Don't be deterred from getting a good meal there, though I must say toward the end of the month, the lines do get longer and longer. But I think the food holds out.
It's pretty good food.
That's what I think, too, yeah. Even though I usually eat elsewhere.
Activities here in the building?
Well, you know, I try to get there before it becomes a fight, and I almost got there in time to get in between them.
There was only one blow that was really exchanged.
There was only one
blow.
It
was very boring. We would like a little more action next time. I mean, what is this? You know, everybody stands in line, waiting, and then at last, some action. And I suppose it's a free action after all.
Well, the way I look at it, the action would have been way more exciting had I gotten in the middle just in time to receive the blow, and then it would have been, you know, that takes it to a whole new level. Now you got the innocent bystander who stepped in between two people that were committed to hurting each other.
You didn't catch the nature of the dispute or whatever it was.
I think it was apparently there was a discussion where people didn't like what they were being told by the other party, and they felt like they had to take it to some
physical level.
To make their point. So,
what's the procedure? Are these folks, will they be, excluded? Will they simply be kind of advised this is an inappropriate behavior? Will they be given meals outside? What happens in this situation?
I'm not exactly sure what their policy is on this. In fact, I was planning on asking. I know that the victim, or the apparent victim in this situation, has not been asked to leave, and the receiver of the blow. And you know what? I've been around him for quite a while, and I've never seen him involved in anything violent before in the past, so I don't...
The other party...
As for the other party, I've seen very little involvement of him in any kind of violence, although he is a little bit loud sometimes, so you can kind of invite violence to be in that way, and I don't know that they're going to exclude him from food. They might. I'm going to try to find out, because if they're not going to exclude him, I'm going to go find him and try to give him some food.
Or you could possibly give him some of your own food, even if he is excluded.
Yes, which I'm not planning on taking any of this, but I might get him something somewhere else, but I have to go find him and see it. I don't think they told him to leave the property, but they might have. So.
Well, I'll go research outside, see if I can determine what... violence can sometimes be sort of sensational, and it's actually a serious departure from the norm here. There's almost... I've never seen anything happen in terms of any violent incidents before, though I haven't been here every time.
It's very rare. My understanding, it's very rare. We're only here once a month, and I've never seen it here. And then when we did it full-time... And the first, when this all began, we saw virtually none. And when we're down on the streets, we see virtually no violence. Every once in a while, someone will get a little excited, but usually that's the first time I've seen someone actually throw a punch.
Now, what about when you were here, when Renee was actually doing a 7-day-a-week thing here? How did that
You know, it was an absolutely amazing thing because, contrary to popular opinion, if you give them responsibility, they police their own. When she, they had such a feeling of affinity towards her and the fact that she was trying to draw them in.
Explain what this was all about when it was going on.
You know, certain things like they weren't supposed to be smoking out on the lawn, but if they were going to be able to
smoke. 7 day a week situation, right?
Yeah.
And 24 hours a day?
Yes, and she actually took a job here to make
it. Groundskeeper.
Yeah, exactly.
How long did this go on for?
Let's see. I guess she was the groundskeeper for about 6, maybe 8 months in the first year that we ran this. And during that time, she was always advocating for them to be able to be here so long as they behaved. And the great part about them behaving was if you gave them responsibility and let them know that it was on their shoulders to take that responsibility seriously, they policed their own. They decided to let them smoke so long as they wouldn't leave cigarette butts everywhere. Well, the kids themselves, mostly the street kids, would actually take coffee cans and go around and collect up buds, and if they saw anybody throwing them down on the ground, they explained them in no uncertain terms that this is a great thing we've got going here and we don't want you to ruin it by littering and, you know, being lazy about it.
Did people sleep at night here on the property?
They may have, although I doubt if that was sanctioned. But they may
have. You have a sleeping ban in Santa Cruz.
Yes, there is.
We don't want people sleeping at night. That would be a criminal behavior.
No, you have to go on to a third shift kind of lifestyle if you're going to be homeless in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, you know, keep your eyes open at all. Meth could be a solution here.
Well, one of the things that makes me wonder about is if you make everyone stay awake during the night, and that's when most criminal activity happens, maybe you shouldn't encourage them to be awake at night all night long.
Or maybe you should encourage them, pay them off as security guards to get a cheaper kind of security force.
You know, one of the things I think there's a lot of potential for is when they police their own, sometimes they take a certain amount of pride in taking care of their own situation like they did at Paradise. And at Paradise, too, they did a great job. It doesn't maybe work universally, but it works really well.
And Scott here is referring to Camp Paradise, which was a homeless-run encampment in 2001 and 2002. Actually, sort of ended in December 2001, although it moved in a much smaller encampment out to an Aptos church. And I think it still exists there for a very small group of people. The groundskeeper situation at the Red Church, where Renee Curry had what was called a youth ministry, she allowed people to be on the property 24 hours a day, I believe, although they couldn't sleep there, provided they kept the area clean and they were well-behaved, if you will. And this provoked a lot of hostility from people like former Mayor Cynthia Matthews, who owns property across the street between the Nickelodeon Theater and the hamburger joint. And Matthews actually tried to have Joel Miller removed as the head of the congregation, Father Joel Miller, prompting a $25,000 ecclesiastical court fight, which ended in essentially vindicating Miller, at least having him continue, although at some both financial cost and also I think he had to do, I don't know, say 12 Hail Marys and say his beads 7 times. You know, they're not Catholic, so that wasn't that sort of thing, but... there is real pressure to eliminate food services downtown, which leads some people to believe that this attack on Food Not Bombs coming up that was seemingly in the making in the last few Saturdays at the post office is directed by conservative forces in the city government or the police force, although it may just be a cranky postmaster who wants them off his property. We'll find out 4 o'clock. Or maybe we won't, but we'll see what happens 4 o'clock Saturday at the main post office, and I invite people to come and check it out. There's also a couple of other things happening. I think tomorrow there's an event going on. I wanted to quickly update you listeners on that. If you go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website and you look on the calendar, for a Friday at 9 in the morning, that's 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, there is a Metro board meeting to restore bus service to Big Basin. That's in City Council Chambers at the early hour of 9 o'clock. It goes from 9 to 11, and the way it's described is on Friday, January 25th, the Santa Cruz City Council Chambers, the Board of Directors of the Transit District will be considering a number of service restorations to take place in March of this year. We urge you to attend the meeting if you possibly can. The meeting starts at 9. The relevant discussion is listed as item 12 on the agenda. While the Metro staff is not recommending restoration of Big Basin bus service at this time, the staff is considering such restoration for a future date, as mentioned in their staff report. Beyond spring 2013, remaining ideas for service changes include restoration of weekend service to Big Basin State Park. There's a full agenda packet online. I am not familiar with this, but the more bus service, the better, particularly for people who don't have cars or bikes. And public transportation, you know, once was considered the wave of the future until, of course, it was overwhelmed by the ride-your-own-car and watch the gas prices rise and your houses get foreclosed on. So couple of other points to make. I just want to mention I posted a couple of stories in the last week. On Tuesday, the Santa Cruz 11 went back to court. Three of them were arraigned on one felony and one trespass charge each. That was Franklin Angel Alcantara, Gabrielle Ripley Phipps, and Brent Adams were all arraigned. They face up to 4 years in prison on a series of absurd charges that are politically motivated. I was once charged with similar charges. Charges against me and others, seven others, were dismissed. But four people are still facing the brunt of Bob Lee's bagman behavior for Wells Fargo Bank. Wells Fargo is a bank that leased property across the street from its open bank for 3.5 years, keeping it vacant or being unable to rent it, depending on how you want to look at it. And it was occupied by some activists, an autonomous group that was linked with Occupy Santa Cruz about a year and a half ago to establish a community center and possibly a shelter for homeless people during the winter. They negotiated with Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo refused. They left peacefully after 3 days and many threats from the police. There was some vandalism in the building, but the people who were charged with it, the Santa Cruz 11, there has been no, I repeat, no evidence whatsoever presented that any of these individuals, and I'm one of the people that was charged, that we did any vandalism. That would have been, of course, counterproductive to the purposes of people who were there. And also, many of us were there as observers. We weren't really part of the protest. We just came and we reported, although I'm supportive of those who occupy vacant buildings, which are run by big criminal bank corporate conspiracies, which is what essentially Wells Fargo is. It is a massive, huge foreclosure fraud expert throughout the country that has caused hundreds, if not thousands, of people to lose their homes and their life savings. And this is just this a simply documented fact. It is not, you know, wild and crazy rhetoric from some street corner radical. It's just the fact. And then these guys get bailed out by the feds to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. And then, of course, the people who expose it, who blow the whistle on it, who try to make use of the property that no one is using. And I know that's a sore point because some people think if they take over a vacant bank building today, they'll take over my house tomorrow, which is, of course, ridiculous because the reason people are taking over a vacant bank building is just exactly to protect your house from being taken over tomorrow. But people have their own perceptions of what's going on, and D.A. Bob Lee is still charging for people with massively overcharging. I've written an article about it. It's called Another Ridiculous Round of Arraignments. It's on Indie Bay. Also, there's an article on the Food Not Bombs, the attack on Food Not Bombs, which that's how I interpret what the police and the postmaster seem to be doing on Saturday. You can check those stories out on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Uncle Dennis will not be coming in tonight. He is, I don't know what he's doing, but he has requested that I put on a show, and I think it may be a new show, although I can't say for sure. It looks like it could well be a new show because it's not in the usual place in the archives. So perhaps Uncle Dennis will be giving us something special tonight, which will be starting in just 2 minutes. I want to thank My guest, Zeke, who's brought in his owner, Wade, to the studio. Thank you, Zeke, or should I say, in dog language, that means appreciate your coming. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your coming too, Wade.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. And I'll be back one of these days, probably on Sunday at 9:30. Again, if you want to catch me on Saturday, I'll be at the Food Not Bombs meal, which is slated to take place at the post office in downtown Santa Cruz. I encourage people to show up and enjoy the food and support Food Not Bombs and offer to cook and serve. They need more people to volunteer to help. And Food Not Bombs isn't just a charity group that serves homeless people food and helps. It helps people to create their own food resources by getting food that is not used by grocery stores and other restaurants and then making it into useful food. But it is also a group that publicizes the message, which is the name of the group, Food Not Bombs, which is really the issue. And hence, they're very political. Similarly, they oppose harassment of homeless people, over-policing, criminalization of poor people, and things of that sort. Not to mention the military behemoth that is eating up everybody's income and murdering people abroad without any kind of due process of law, whether they're an American citizen or not. But if they have a terrorist label, they're duck soup for the drones. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks again, Wade, and talk to you on Sunday. The show's going to be archived at www.huffsantacruz.org. Go there if you want to hear some parts of it again. And you can also join the Huff email list on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. Thanks for being with me. And up next is From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis.
Hazy.
Welcome to From the Creams to the Dregs. And this is Rick with my friend Coral here. Say hi, Coral. Say hello.
Hi, Coral.
And we're sitting in for Uncle Dennis tonight, and here we go. I think. a great Beatles cut. Oh, anyway, well, it's good to be here. This is my first time on the air, basically, so be nice to me if you're calling, all right? Anyway, Coral and I are here for Uncle Dennis, and we put together a bunch of stuff from the 60s and 70s, a lot of Beatles stuff and Cream, and or as my my mother-in-law used to say, the Creams. I love those Creams, the Creams, just a bunch of stuff, some McCartney stuff and Police and stuff that I know you'll recognize. And so let's see here we go with just one more little Beatle cut.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life? You didn't run, you didn't lie, you knew I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I had told you. Ooh, you were meant to be near me. Ooh, and I want you to hear me say we'll be together. What can I do? What can I be? When I'm with you, I wanna stay there. If I'm true, I'll never leave, and if I do, I know the way there. Ooh, and I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day?